Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. I'm Casey Luskin with the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, and we have on the show with us today Dr. David Berlinski, a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. He is the author of many books and essays on a number of different topics, ranging from mathematics to logic to science. His recent book, The Devil's Delusion, was incredibly popular. We've had numerous requests for reprints of the book, which is a withering critique of the new atheists such as Richard Dawkins. We have him on the show with us today to talk about a number of interesting items, including Richard Dawkins' latest book. Dr. Berlinski, thank you so much for coming on the show with us today.
It's entirely my pleasure, as always.
I think it would be fun to start off with Richard Dawkins' new book, The Greatest Show on Earth. First off, have you read The Greatest Show on Earth, and what were your thoughts?
I read it very closely, and I got to tell you, it's really a nice book. It's a good book, much, much better than the book that preceded it, The God Delusion. And I think he's recaptured something that was probably the basis for his wide appeal, a kind of bouncy enthusiasm. You know, the Greatest Show on Earth is supposed to be an all-encompassing defense of Darwin's theory of evolution, but Dawkins doesn't spend all that much time defending the theory. What he really does is what he does best. He gets into zoology, he gets into the natural history of different kinds of animals and organisms and plants, and he's full of life. It really is a good book. There are two things that bothered me about the book. This was really tasteless. He suggests that those who are disposed to deny Darwin's theory of evolution are Holocaust deniers in spirit, and that is just what the Russians call nekulturne. It shouldn't have been in the book. It's graceless and it's tasteless, and an editor should have red-penciled that. But those things happen. The rest of the book, I think, is very engaging, very nicely written, and above all, full of a kind of innocent enthusiasm for what he's doing. And I didn't see that quality in his previous book, The God Delusion. And it's nice to see it back.
Well, Dr. Berlinski, I appreciate your comments and can definitely, I think I actually agree with much of that. It felt like we were reading the old Richard Dawkins from any of his previous books coming back.
Exactly right. The guy who is just starting out and is just struck by the wonder of it all. And that's not usually, I mean, especially in 2009, it's not what you associated with Richard Dawkins. So it's nice to see.
Now, all of that having been said, did you feel that he made a strong case for Darwinian evolution in the book? I mean, after all, the book does promote Ida at one point.
I know. No, I didn't feel he made a strong case for Darwin's theory of evolution. He just spent a couple of pages on the theory, and then he got directly into the material he really likes, tracing the history of various animals, organisms, sort of giving an anecdotal account of how life on Earth progressed. A strong case, I don't think it was part of his plan. It's nothing he achieved.
Now, obviously, you have been a critic in the past of both neo-Darwinian evolution and intelligent design. Richard Dawkins certainly critiques intelligent design in his book, and in one chapter he makes a lot of disteleological arguments that God wouldn't do this, or an intelligent designer wouldn't do that. Do you find those sorts of arguments persuasive, or what do you think of those kinds of arguments?
No. But I'm in a very charitable mood this morning. These things happen. A lot of what Richard Dawkins does, he feels obliged to do because he's an extremely prominent figure, and he's carved out a role for himself in the debate. So if he's coming to these kind of arguments and saying, God wouldn't do this, God wouldn't do that, that's kind of reflex action, like a squid squirting ink. I don't take that too seriously. You know, this whole class of arguments, what God would do, and wouldn't it have been better on the part of the deity to have consulted Richard Dawkins before he designed the human spine? That kind of stuff, you know, it sort of slides under the bridge. I don't think anyone takes it too seriously. Natural evil, the presence of evil, that's a different question. But crummy design, we know too much from the history of the sciences to be deceived by superficial appearances of ineptness in design. We know just too much.
Well, let's move to another book that's getting a lot of attention this year, and that is The Origin of Species by Charles Darwin. This obviously being the 150th anniversary of the publication of The Origin. What are some good reasons for us to be celebrating this anniversary of this book at this time?
we might as well be completely honest. This is an important book in the history of Western civilization because it makes some radical claims, and it has had a tremendous influence, not only in Great Britain and the United States, but throughout the world. I think it can safely be said that Darwin's book has changed so many things that some sense of honor is appropriate. I would be the last person on earth to wish to deny it. Whether the extravagance of the praise for Darwin is merited, that's a completely different question. In my opinion, is that there's something dreadfully embarrassing about this promotion of Darwin to a singular pantheon. He's the only one of that kind of status in that pantheon. And if you think of the great figures in the history of the sciences who have not received that same degree of commendation and admiration, it's really quite striking. Why is Darwin the singular figure that he seems to be? Yes, he's had a tremendous importance, but so is Einstein, so is Newton, so is Clark Maxwell. And it's really remarkable the extent to which there has been a very concerted effort, to call it agitprop if you want, to move into this kind of a singular, almost a mythical figure. And that has no scientific explanation. The explanation lies in politics and the sociology of the discussion as it's been unfolding over the last 20 years.
Well, I think you just answered my next question, which was Darwin as genius a scientist as many make him out to be? I mean, would you agree that obviously he was a genius scientist, but there's a lot of other genius scientists out there who certainly don't get the curious amount of praise and adulation that Darwin receives?
Darwin was an interesting guy, no doubt about it. Whether I would use the word genius, I think it's the better part of wisdom to reserve genius for the kind of talents that blossom in mathematics or the physical sciences, whereas someone like an Einstein or someone like a Newton or a Clark Maxwell can really grope or almost dreamwalk their way to astonishingly and radically new conclusions. Darwin didn't do that. He was a patient assembler of facts. And he developed a correlative theory, so he thought, to explain the facts. But there's something very plodding in the way Darwin approached the problems of biology. And I think that Darwin would be the first to admit it. If you look closely at the rhetoric of The Origin of Species, he is saying, here I am, Darwin, mid-century. I've spent 25 years patiently collecting this mass of data, and I've been exploring in my own mind the best way to interpret it, and I have some hypotheses I'd like to advance, and here are the objections, here's the supporting evidence, here's the evidence that is not quite supporting. No, I don't think I would use the word genius to describe Darwin. I don't think there have been many geniuses in the history of biology. Probably the closest to a sparkling and insightful intelligence would be Francis Crick.
This is a question that I think we all would like to know the answer to, but what did you do to celebrate Darwin Day this past year?
Yeah, I didn't do nothing. Didn't do a blessed thing. I got one birthday a year that I celebrate. That's my own. And I let everything else slide.
Well, Dr. Berlinski, I can certainly relate to that. I'm personally more inclined to celebrate Abraham Lincoln's birthday around Darwin Day. Obviously, both Lincoln and Darwin were born on the exact same date of the exact same year. And I think that in recent years, although Darwin himself probably would not stand for this, his name has become increasingly associated with attacks on academic freedom, whereas, of course, Lincoln will always stand as a symbol of freedom for all people. So that's who I would prefer to celebrate on February 12th. But that aside, we really appreciate your time and coming on the podcast with us today. If our listeners are interested in learning more about Dr. Berlinski's new book, The Deniable Darwin, go check out his websites, deniabledarwin.com or davidberlinski.org. I'm Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.